Welcome to the Smart Thinking Podcast. I'm your host, Ted Knightsky. Today's podcast is one of our bi-weekly interview episodes, and today's guest is Jim Brindley. Jim is both a friend and a mentor for me. He's lived a great life filled with adventure, success, support for others and other causes, and has demonstrated incredible perseverance. When I first met Jim, I thought he was both the sweetest and saltiest person I'd ever been around. He's kind, caring, and very candid. He and his beautiful wife, Marge, are two people that see a cause in everyone they meet, and they will invest their time, talent, and treasure in an effort to support or advance any cause. This podcast is a conversation I had with Jim in his home. Jim is a private person who did us all a favor by sharing a bit about his life, his journey to optimism, as well as his attitude and love of life.
Won't you take my hand and shake the world?
Today with me is Jim Brindley, who grew up in central Wisconsin but has made his living and life here in the Milwaukee area. Jim Brindley is someone who is unique in my life because he has had a few health hiccups in his life today, and he's one of the most resilient, tenacious, and perseverant men I've ever met. Welcome to the podcast, Jim.
Wow. Thanks, Ted. Nice to be here.
Yeah. So a couple of quick questions. Tell us about yourself, where you grew up.
I grew up in southwestern Wisconsin in Richland Center, small farm town halfway between Madison and La Crosse on Highway 14 many years ago.
And went to high school there?
Oh, yeah. I went to high school and on to Madison, to the University of Wisconsin, undergrad in economics, and then I went to law school there, and then at that time the family farms were starting. You could see the handwriting on the wall. So as much as I love southwestern Wisconsin, I felt it was probably best to look to a large urban area for an opportunity to practice law. So that's how I got to Milwaukee.
And in high school, tell us a little bit about what high school was like for you.
A little different than today. First of all, it was a simpler time. We were all pretty naive back then, but it was a good time too. I loved growing up in a rural area. We had a consolidated school district, so we had kids that rode a bus for up to an hour plus to get to school. So they brought really a whole different story when they came to school, and that was really a good way for the city kids to get to understand what was really going on in the country.
And you, if I remember correctly, you were pretty passionate about a sport in high school that you still play today, right?
Oh, yeah. I played basketball and golf, but golf, I've now played golf for 63 years. Yeah, and some of my best friends are people that I met playing golf, and we have sustained our friendship playing golf.
And how were you in high school as a golfer?
Competitive. Touché.
Yeah, I think it was pretty good, actually. You're very humble as well, so that's one of your awesome
characters. Well, I had the good fortune to play with some guys that were really good. In fact, one of my best friends, this is amazing coming from a small farm town, but he was actually... And back then they didn't have divisions, and he was a state golf champion and went on to captain the University of Wisconsin golf team. So that was really being with two or three guys that were at that level raises your game. It has to. So I was blessed that way.
And what type of like core values, characteristics do you think were instilled in you in, you know, growing up in that part of the state with your family?
Well, core values, that's a really good way to put it. People worked hard. For the most part, man's word was his bond, which I don't feel necessarily that's as common today. But in a small rural town, everyone knew everyone. And as a kid, you weren't going to get away with anything, so you didn't really... and back then, adults felt that they had... the authority, when they saw a kid out of line, to call them on it and call the parent or whatever it is, there was much more involvement, I think, as a community in overlooking kids as they were growing up than there probably is today.
And tell us a little bit, one of my favorite things is you've got like some really cool family history there with your grandfather and...
Oh, yeah. Well, again, you can't pick your relatives, but my great-grandfather was a Civil War veteran, and he mustered out of Camp Randall Stadium, and every time I go down to a football game, I think of that, and I go to the arch where they all marched out and everything, but... But anyway, so he survived the Civil War, came back, and he had three daughters, and his wife and one of his daughters were very, very active in the women's suffrage movement in Wisconsin. And here's a little tidbit about Wisconsin, but he was, my great-grandfather was a state senator, and when the ratification of the 18th Amendment, I think, is women's suffrage. I can't remember which number it is. I think it is. But in any event, in 1919, I believe, was the year that the amendment was to be ratified by the states. And my aunt, who had been very involved in this, wanted Wisconsin to be recognized as the first state to ratify the amendment. Turns out that on the day that the Wisconsin State Legislature ratified that amendment, Illinois did as well. And so my aunt prevailed upon her father, who had voted on it, to literally get on a train right there. And back then, you had to deliver the papers to Washington. He didn't even have a change of clothes, and so he chugged out on a train to Washington and slapped the papers down so that if you checked, I believe you'd find that Wisconsin was the first state recognized to ratify that amendment.
Well, that's a great story.
Yeah, well.
Poor guys out there, but whatever it takes to make them.
It was so different, though, back then, and it was, to me, living in a small town, it seemed like it was easier for people to become involved passionately in things they really cared and believed in. That just may be me, but anyway, it's a cool family story. I'm very proud of it.
Well, that, I think, ties a little bit into the genetics of the topic we're going to get to here in a second, but you also ended up working in the state capitol.
Yeah.
Either in law school or right after law school. Yeah, Tell us a little bit about that, because where you and Marge met.
Yeah,
right?
It was really one of the most interesting jobs I've ever had in my life to this day. So when I was a second-year law student, there was in the law school, they were looking for someone to work in the Wisconsin Legislative Council, which, for people who don't know, is the agency that provides legal counsel to all of the legislative committees in the Assembly and the Senate. And anyway, I don't know, apparently no one else applied because somehow I got the opportunity to take the job. And so for, for nearly 2 years, I worked there. Well, it happened, there's many good things that happened, but one of them was that there was this attractive young lady that I saw walking through the halls, and over a period of time and a little perseverance, I was able to get the introduction, and she's now been my wife for over 40 years, and I hope for quite a few more.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, it was cool.
Yeah, and there's so many great life experiences that you've shared with me and my family that have impacted us. I mean, mm-hmm. I never would have been in the Grand Tetons or had the kind of cool treks and trails that I've been on with my kids, so it's pretty cool to hear that. One of the things, and the reason we're here today, is to talk about, what actually I think is now genetic, at listening to that story about your aunt and on your mom's side of the family about, hey, you're going to get on the train, you're going to be the first in Washington, is this great tenacity and perseverance that you have. Because over that course, you practiced law here in Milwaukee, right? Mm-hmm. And corporate law.
Yeah.
And retired and then helped found a company. You want to talk about that for a minute?
Well,
because it's all interrelated, if I remember.
Yeah, it really is. I think I know where you want to go with our conversation today. And so about 12 years ago, I had cancer for the first time. And I'd been a healthy boy, and so this came as quite a surprise. But during the treatment of it, for the first time, we started to get statements, bills, explanations of benefits, all this stuff that is incomprehensible to the average person, of which I consider myself one. So over a period of time looking at it, it came to me that it would be really helpful to the consumer if there was a way to consolidate all of these claims and explanations, all this information, onto a single monthly statement, like a credit card statement, a tear-off coupon where you pay one source and you don't have to send checks out to 20 different providers who each one of them independently bill you. So that idea became the kind of the beginning of a company that we founded and has been now operating for nearly 10 years and is now expanded outside of the state of Wisconsin with a really kind of a cool idea. And now it's really, there's so much intellectual property that goes into it in terms of stuff that I'm not aware of. I'm not a computer guy, but that's where the game is now, and the technology part of it. But it's so unique, I will say, I'm quite proud. We were able to get 6 patents on different concepts within our business model. So,
and inspired by like you and what you just said, the first time I had cancer.
Yeah.
So Jim's had cancer 4 times.
Yeah.
And I've been in with you. I've been a friend of yours now for 5-6 years. And I remember hearing in the third time, kind of towards the end there, that, you know, things were good and I was getting these good tests and things were moving along there. And you said, Nightsky, I got struck by lightning a 4th time.
Yeah.
So walk us through kind of, if you wouldn't mind, like each of the cancers and the timeline, because they're not all related.
Two of them are, and then 2 of them aren't. But so the first, I've had cancer twice, a cancer called liposarcoma, and basically it's usually a cancer in a, it creates a fatty tumor, and the fatty tumor is surgically removed, and if you're lucky, it hasn't expanded outside of the tumor. The first term that I ever heard that resonated with me was when the doctor comes in after surgery and says, the cancer was fully encapsulated, we removed the tumor with good margins. That is magic, because that means they think it's all in the mass that was removed, and you're free to go. And so that happened the first time. It happened the second time I had the thing, but later on we went back in and did a little radiation. I had prostate cancer, and then I just recently, I'm in the process of recovering from leukemia. So there's a lot of luck in life, and some people would say I haven't been lucky. I'd say I have been very lucky, because I've learned out of these health experiences so much. I've met so many good people, and that's just part of the pathway in life. You just don't know what's around the corner, so it's worked out pretty well.
What is, like, and let's just talk about the most recent bout, because, you know, what goes through your mind that first? So you're on vacation, you're driving out west, you're not feeling right, you come home early.
Yeah.
You're, you know, shocked.
Shock isn't really, I don't know what it is about this stuff. So we were out in Southern California, and within a period of 4 or 5 days, you know, I'd take a shower and I didn't have the energy to dry myself off. And so anyway, my wife said, we got to get out of here. So we got home, and within a day, we thought that there was a kind of a problem, a health issue out in California. I mean, it's something that's a disease that possibly I had. But they came in and said, you know, we really have some bad news. It's leukemia. But the good news is, 10 years ago, they came out with several drugs that are pretty effective in certain kinds of leukemia, if that's what you've got. And so that started the process. We went to Frater, a tremendous hospital, great doctors, great staff, wonderful people, so supportive. And fortunately, the type that I was diagnosed with is treatable with a particular drug, which I'll probably take for the rest of my life.
And one of the things that you assured that I didn't realize was there's more than one type of leukemia.
Yeah, there's lots. And, you know, it's all blood cancer related. So there's lymphoma and leukemia. They're in the whole same family of blood cancers and everything. So that's what this most of the large health systems kind of take those blood cancers, and they have a team that just deals with those, and that's what we got involved with at Fraidert. And there's so much, as you know, there's so much science involved. Some of those cancers are so rare that there aren't resources available to try and find a drug cure or something like that. Fortunately, leukemia, they find one drug and then they're able to kind of expand its applications to other leukemias. So anyway, that's all I know.
How would you describe that experience? Because when I came and met with you, we had talked about your doctors, and you had said, you know, I've got this choice. You started giving me percentages.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recall what the first percentage was, but I remember it being really low.
You mean a potential recovery or
yes.
cure?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, with leukemia, at least with what I had, you got two options. One is a bone marrow transplant, if you can find a suitable donor. And that's a very technical matching process. And they have a national registry. And so they go through a process of trying to find, it's very technical, and I'm not competent to really, you know, discuss that. But the second alternative is chemotherapy and any other related drugs they've got that they think would be effective for particular kind of leukemia you might have. So I was told that the cure rate on bone marrow transplant is somewhere around 65%. For the chemo route, it's more like 40-45%. Not what you like, you know, when you walk in, you like to hear something like 95% or something.
Right.
But, you know, when you're in the situation, you know, it is what it is. So in my case, we could not find a suitable bone marrow transplant match. So it was plan B all the way. So
I think the part about you that is so remarkable to me is even now as you speak, you say it so casually, yeah. Like, oh, 60-44. And the first time that you had shared that with me, you had said it in a manner like, it's a good thing I got 44%.
Yeah.
And then there was another procedure where it was like, there's this period of time, Ted, where, you know, I've got this like 15% chance because my immune system will be dropped down. Mm-hmm. But you said it to me like, yeah, I got a 15% chance. Mm-hmm. I don't wager on 15%.
Yeah.
Most people don't think of it that way. So help me and our listeners like understand, how do you maintain that positive mindset?
Well, it's not unique to, when you're against a wall and you have no other alternative, relax. Life is coming to you, and you have to take it as it comes. There isn't. So what's plan B? I mean, they're telling you all this other stuff doesn't work. This is the pathway. We're going to be honest with you. Thank you very much. And these are the statistics historically. And then you start saying, well, by God, I'm going to beat it. And it's kind of interesting. If you got a minute, I'll tell you something. The process with chemo, which I knew nothing about, but chemotherapy, early on, you know, it's changed about a number of, it's improved over the years. It still can take a tremendous amount out of an individual, especially, I'm 70 years old. But when you, in our treatment process, I would go in for 5 days, stay in the hospital, and I was getting drugs, or chemo, boy, almost around the clock, but, you know, for a large part of the time I was there. Then I'd come home for 20 days to recover, or at least to try and come back. The immune system had been wiped out in the chemo, so you literally cannot, you just got to be quarantined in your house because someone looks at you and you can pick up whatever it is they've got. So your body is getting pounded down with the chemo, and then you're even getting transfusions during that 20-day recovery period because you just don't have enough red and white blood cells to process your normal bodily functions. But what do you want to know now? I'm losing.
No,
I still have chemo brain.
Yeah, chemo. Yeah, you'd never know. I think most of the people listening would be pretty surprised to hear that. But No, that's what it is. I mean, the you know, when I would visit you at Freightert or come over here and visit you, you had, and my perception was, you had a sense of awe on this journey.
Mm-hmm.
And I would, I'll be honest, I would kind of pitifully get in the car and think to myself, like, if that was me, like, how would I have this sense of wonder? Mm-hmm. Like, you had a sense of wonder. You'd be like, Ted, look at this.
It's amazing. The science part of it. I mean, I've always been... So one of the things I can and do is sometimes I feel like I take my mind outside of my body, and my mind is up here looking down on, you know, what's going on down there. And between the science they were telling me about and the statistics and everything, and then I would observe my body going through this stuff in terms of the blood counts and all that other kind of stuff, and I was fascinated. I mean, I didn't know anything about this beforehand, but... From a purely educational standpoint, it was an amazing experience. You know, it's all luck, but you have no control over that, so there's no sense in worrying about it. You know, I'm going to share something with you. You talk about attitude. So if you have just a second, it's a digression, but it ties back to golf. Symmetra Tour has been here in Milwaukee for the last 3 or 4 years. We hosted a young lady, very impressive young lady, for a couple of years here, and we've maintained a really nice friendship. And she sent us a book, my wife and I, that had been written by a woman well known around the country for a teaching pro. And the title of the book was Golf from Point A. And that's all you really need to know. It's a really nicely, it's not a thick, big thing or anything. But the concept is, if you're a golfer, is that you try, this is about channeling yourself and basically only taking golf one shot at a time from point A. First hole, you hit the ball, maybe it goes in the woods. Well, point A is now in the woods. You forget everything about the last shot, you forget everything about the ones coming up, yet all you do is focus on point A. You hit the ball, now it's in the sand trap. You forget about the woods, you forget about the next hole, you're in the sand. And it's a way of mental discipline that people that get into that in the golf, you know, when you try it in golf, you're amazed over a period of time how that can really help you become a better golfer, because you take away all the noise and it's just one shot at a time. Well, I never thought about it until this happened, but that philosophy is really transferable to your daily living. And I'll give you the example here. So when I would go in for chemo, the first thing they'd come in and they'd say, well, here's the 5 days, you know, you're going to be for 5 days. And I'd say, please write up on the board. They had a big board in there, and they'd write the name of the nurses and the doctors so you could know who they were and everything. And then I said, please write up on the board all of the drugs you're going to infuse me with over the next 5 days. And then, so the next day they'd start out, and I'd say, please tell me, what is today? What drugs are we going to have? And that was my point A. And so all I focused on was that, and at the end of the day, that was it. That was all gone. Well, now I got a new point A. That's the next day. And Marge, my wife, and I, we said it's too daunting when you think that they said that they were going to do 8 cycles of chemo. I didn't have to have them. But I thought, I can't deal with that, but I can win this battle one day at a time. So every day was point A. And all I wanted to know was, what do we got to do today to beat this? And that's really what guided us through the whole thing.
That is awesome.
Well,
it's like the quote, don't look back, we're not going that way.
Yeah.
That's a great way. So
it's very powerful, though.
Do you think, and in the beginning of the interview, do you think that that is a family trait metaphor that just is instilled in you? Did you grow to that?
I don't have an answer for that. I will tell you that by nature, I was not as optimistic of a person as I am now until I met my wife. I get choked up.
Well, Marge is a pretty remarkable lady.
Well, and I have to tell you, though, a lot of her attitudes are things that I've adopted. And you have a choice in life, and that is you can be as happy as you want to make yourself.
That's great wisdom there. And that's one of those pieces, Jim, where it's one of the things that endears me to you is that, you know, like at the beginning of the piece, you're the saltiest, sweetest guy I'd ever met in my life. And, you know, one of the great interactions with you where you've been a great mentor for me through all of this and prior to cancer was you, whether that comes from you or Marge, you know, you and I have known each other for a while and you watched me evolve through my career. And there were a couple times you kind of put your arm around me and sometimes I thought you were going to put me in a headlock to try to get me to, you know, reframe and refocus. And that's a great quality about you. And whether that's from Marge or through this, I mean, it's carried you through cancer 4 times. And, you know, that's the great part about a marriage is the strength that comes from 2 people. Yeah.
Well, I just want to give credit to her because, you know, she's been the rock. But in any event, that's kind of how we got through this. And, it seems to have tided us over very well.
So 2 more things I wanted to ask you about. One is the boxing gloves.
Yeah.
So when I come visit you, I think it was the 2nd time at Freighter, you know, you're in this room. You look like you had slippers on, a robe. I mean, you look like a Sunday afternoon. You had a stack of papers, your glasses. And I thought, how does this guy have leukemia? You're looking great. Yeah. And then there were some boxing gloves over in the corner. Tell us a little bit about those.
Well, you know, I told you that many of my good friends are golfers. Well, almost the first day I was in the hospital, I'd sent out an email. I believe in being transparent about these life events with friends. And so I'd sent out an email just saying, here's the challenge I'm facing and, you know, we're going to beat this, but I just want you to be aware of it because I don't want you to hear it from someone else. Well, so one of my good golfing friends showed up with a box. I said, open it. And so here are 2 really, I mean, these are not cheap old boxing gloves, but he said, you have to beat this.
Yeah.
And that inspired me.
Yeah. Well, you put them in the corner, you have a fighting spirit. And again, that whole attitude of point A to point A, I think that's one thing that you're going to help a lot of people because they're going to walk away with that attitude. So the last one is empathy. One of the interesting conversations that I had had with you when we were sitting here and we're in Jim's home and he's got this great den overlooking, you know, birds everywhere, the forest, Milwaukee River. It's just a really serene place. And we were having a conversation about how other people were responding. Hmm. Like, you know, they hear you have leukemia and the world wants to drop off casseroles and different pieces like that. But I think one of the things that most people don't really recognize is like how to properly respond or act or support. And what's your advice for, you know, like I would come over, I'd drop off a book and shoot the breeze with you and act like nothing was happening, and you'd be like, look at me, I'm all swollen, or I have no hair, and I don't know, you look pretty sexy with the chrome dome, and your hair is growing. I mean, now if someone hadn't seen you for 2 years, they wouldn't even know that you had experienced it. But how do you suggest other people support, you know, guys like you and women like you who are going through something like that? Because most people don't know what to do, and I think we tend to shy away and off. Mm. So, I mean, what worked? What helped? What should other people do in that situation?
Well, what I've learned, and I didn't know it before, was going through this process, particularly if you're having chemotherapy, is you're managing what little energy you do have. And as a result of that, sometimes the most well-intended gestures can really be a stressful situation for the person that's going through it. Were it me, number one, I'd send a card to someone I loved every week. I would send them an email, and it could be any crazy BS-y thing you want. Just thinking of you, here's what I did today, 2 or 3 sentences. That keeps the person in the now. And then always leave the door open. If there's anything I can do for you or your family, you got to let me know.
And that's one of the cool things about you and Marge that I just want to end with is that when I first met you, you and Marge and I were talking about how you could help your niece, how you could help kids that you had met and how you could help others. And I think that, you know, your tenacious spirit, your resilience, your kindness are things that are very endearing about you. And I think the people who listen to this today, I hope, will walk away with a new sense of how to deal with, you know, whatever is facing them. Mm-hmm. We've had a couple of podcasts talking about perseverance and being grateful for the positions you're in, but you shared a lot of wisdom today with the point A to point A, and how
that's not mine. I didn't write that book.
Hey, all great people steal from others.
Yeah. Well, I want to give attribution.
Yeah.
Her name is Susie Myers, and she's a great golf pro. Haven't met her, but she's a pro out in Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah, and we'll post that book on the piece.
All right.
So, this was awesome. Thank you very, very much for your time on this issue, and I look forward to this moving some people in some different mindsets.
Well, thank you.
So, let's do some smart thinking. How can you reframe your life and find greater appreciation for all that you have? When faced with your next challenge, how can you take Jim's point A mindset and make a more fulfilling life for yourself? That's it. That's the Smart Thinking Podcast. As always, please share this episode on your social media platform, but more importantly, next time you need a reminder of how wonderful life is, or someone you know needs a boost or pep talk, share this conversation with them and remind them that Jim is a champion of mindset, and anyone else can master their own attitude and their journey by focusing first and foremost on their current point A.